in the way that the trip to India Blanche and I took a couple years ago represented an ending and a beginning. This trip we took in the last 3 weeks had the same effect. A lot of stuff is ending. My experience in India was that my pursuit of an Eastern spiritual path was no longer a defining element for me. I appreciated the Hindu Buddhist cultures and all they had given to me. And as I explained in the talks back then, when I would arrive at the shrines that were most important to me, some of which had influenced me 50 years before, I really just lay down on the ground, put my head on the soil, and said thank you. And thank you, and thank you, and thank you. Because I had been so enriched by the journey. But I also knew that it no longer defined me. Going to Europe on this trip, which was in some ways a business trip because this musical of Ghost was opening in Paris and Madrid, and we were invited to come, and I found it hard to say no to those things, although I do, but somehow Paris was a very big draw, and we went, and the play itself was a very powerful experience. Watching something that you created 30 or more years before reimagined and returning in so many different guises, some of which are surprising and beautiful, some of which I didn't particularly like. It didn't really matter to me. It was just the living reality of it. And kind of the experience of sitting in the auditorium and seeing this thing flowing out of something that had started, as I described in my last talk, as a kind of a spark, just a little spark of an idea. And it became a movie, and it became a play, and it became multiple versions of these plays, which are continuing to play and speak to people, and people sit there crying and laughing and having a remarkable time, and I get to meet all of these actors and directors and very interesting people, and I get to give a lot of interviews, which have now become spiritual talks, and surprisingly wanted. I'm really thrown by it. These journalists who come to ask me about why did you write this movie, et cetera, et cetera. They all want to know where it came from, and of course I start to go back to meditation, really, and spiritual practice, and then they become like, they put their pens down, and they just start listening. And they don't know what to do with the material, but they know they are really getting something that they seem to want, and I keep feeling that's why I'm there, so I just keep it going, and it gets delivered, and now I just got an email from this big Paris television company that wanted to come out here and interview me for a 45-minute segment on some show about Ghost. And I don't even know what that's about, but to me what it's about is speaking about what we do and what the remarkable nature of stillness and letting go and surrender and how it works. And the hunger that I started to feel there from people in all these different cultures was extraordinary. It's not familiar to me because I've been around for a long time and mostly it's kind of in the background of people's lives, but this idea of there's another way, that sitting still might actually provide an opportunity to find something that outside life is not offering. And the outside life in the old world, which is Europe, has a profound amount of darkness in it. Going to the great museums and the churches, which we did, bring about an immersion in a world of so much suffering, of sainthood and crucifixion and pursuing life in a kind of horror show that offers hope that somehow when you die, you'll be free of it. And it surrounds the culture. And it's very depressing and difficult. On the other hand, I have to say, it's very much of the moment, because we are experiencing in our world right now a culture that is somehow spiraling out of the control and the calmness and the centeredness that we knew it to have when we were younger. Something is going on, and people are frightened, and they are concerned, and they want to find something that isn't necessarily going to be 20 years from now or when on their deathbed. They want to find something that might actually be available to them in this very moment. And the great promise of a spiritual practice is that it doesn't focus on future. It really focuses on right now and the power of now, as Eckhart Tolle told us. This is where it's at. If you are working for a future event, that's fine in its own way, but why delay what is already present? And what I experienced there was a lot of art, because it was the Venice Biennale, and there was an enormous amount of art happening there, and there was a lot of art happening in Madrid and in Paris. But there was a museum in Madrid, the Sofia something, which is where Dali and Picasso have a lot of their work displayed. And one of the joys of going into that museum was this breakout from the traditional darkness of the whole preceding centuries. Now, we've already had, at that point, a lot of Impressionism and Post-Impressionism was happening, so clearly people were finding a lighter brush, a lighter tone to life in the world, and we all, I think even to this day, celebrate that. But, you know, Picasso, Braque, all these extraordinary artists came in and just shattered everything, and it was like it was so needed. We needed to break out of the weight and the power of that dark imagery. And it was happening. And then we kept going to other museums, and we watched suddenly that breakthrough turn into a free-for-all, into all sorts of things like minimalism and objectivism. And I mean, one thing after another that ultimately kind of became meaningless. It's like, really? Just an all-white painting? I mean, yes, I know it makes sense on some level, but what does it really mean to us and the culture? It's intellectually stimulating, it might even be soothing, but what is it saying? What is all of this talking about? And then we went to the Biennale, which was the culture of this very moment. Some pieces were breathtakingly stimulating and beautiful and wondrous, and you could feel we are finding our way into a time and space where the rules are gone and we can create new rules, and some of them will be glorious and uplifting, and some of them will be meaningless and depressing and confusing, but we are definitely in a new time. But what I looked for in the Biennale, and what I think we all look for, is the words meaning, what does it mean? What is that about? What does it say to me? And what you start to discover, I think, is a collective aesthetic. It's the kind of thing where you know when it works, you know when it breaks through, when it speaks to you without processing it through the mind or through your art history. It just is. There's just an isness about it that says something to you. And it may be different for each person, but when you find those pieces of art that are of this moment, something vibrates in you. Isness, nowness, in touch with something that comes out of some kind of flow that's either external or internal, but it manifests and it connects with you. And when it connects with you, you feel, one, connected, that something spoke to you from someone else. It went, oh, wow. It can lift you up and expose you to new layers of understanding, or it can just comfort you in some profound way with what you already know and feel. Great art is a kind of spiritual connection. It's a moment of recognition, of seeing in this very space, in this form, which can be two-dimensional, three-dimensional, it can be sculptural, it can be in motion, it can be a videotape. They're doing, I mean, everything that's possible is being done. And when somebody comes from that central core place of being, that being is lifted up into your consciousness and you get to experience that awareness. In a way, it's not different than class. Class is, in some ways, an aesthetic experience. We come to this class prepared to touch something that speaks to us and gives us a reflection of who we are, hope for something in the future, some sense of a deepening of our current reality. We're all coming here looking for something to get, but mostly what we want to get is, maybe like, finally, or thank you, or this is what I've been looking for all week. What is that thing? What is that thing? And where does one have to go to get it? Well, museums have offered it for centuries. And it speaks to its time, it speaks to its culture. The darkness of the museums in much of Europe, the pictorialization of what is there, absolutely was necessary for people in the 1200s and 1300s and 1400s, they were all being reflected by something that spoke to the darkness of the times and the possibility of light and transformation and something better at the end, because it was really hard to imagine it was going to get much better in the moment in most people's lives. So they had to project it forward. But Buddha broke that down for the Eastern cultures and said, no, it's right here now. It's right here. And those people who saw art and experienced the immediacy of it got that first implication or intimation of it is here right now. And in most of these museums, they have a couple of benches in some of the rooms where you can sit down and look at the paintings. Most people just sit down and look at their iPhones and just try to take a little nap or whatever they're going to do. Occasionally, you see somebody really sitting with the work. It's always interesting. Sometimes it's people standing and they're like, and it's not intellectual, it's not informational, it's not looking at the little thing on the side that tells you the history of the piece. It's like one-on-one. It's like, there are some paintings that really pull that off. And the great ones are the ones you really love for that. The great paintings are the ones that endure. You walk to them, you enter into that environment, and you experience, where in life can you go to get that? Well, one of the places you can go, if not a museum, is a meditation retreat, or a place where you can actually sit and be quiet and absorb this, and even the phone in the background. You can sit and absorb something that is so present tense and so wonderful that you don't have to go all the way to the museum to get it. You don't have to go to church or synagogue or the mosque. You just sit down and you can get it. The thing that's gotten, the thing that art gives us, the thing that meditation gives us, the thing that the pursuit of the spiritual, if you will, gives us, is the rush of awareness that it's all happening right at this moment. It's right here. And if you can follow this dictum that I learned when I was in Australia, and I've taught a bit, and Blanche and I used it in Europe, the dictum of stop, sit, stay. Like you tell a dog, stop, sit, stay. If you just park yourself on a bench in the middle of a park, and Blanche and I really used this, and you just sit there without having to go to the next thing, without having to just sit back and go, oh, God, I'm so tired. You just sit. And this thing happens, life just happens around you. And there's a part of you that can be sort of interrelated with that, conceptually connected, judging this person, wondering about that person, or even that starts to quiet down, and suddenly you're just in life. You're just there. What you discover when you sit still, and what I've been talking about a lot recently, is that which reacts to things in the stillness. Like the mind thinking about something and wandering off, or looking at somebody and saying, oh, that poor person, or oh, I wish I could be in bed with that person, or whatever your attachments are, your reactions are, the reactivity of your mind to what's going on around you begins to show you who you are. You learn about you and how you react. Some of us are so reactive all the time that we are in a state of constant distraction by our reactions to life. Our likes and our dislikes, our wants and our fears, our hopes and our ambitions. All of this stuff is very reactive, and we build an entire life story around our reactions. The thing I'm trying to get at for all of us in this class, because it's something I am going through, is the appearance of reactions that surprise me, and the mechanism which Rudy taught and which I have practiced and am having to practice more and more is let it go. Let it go. You don't need to react to that. You don't need to use that as a stimulus. See what happens when you just don't go there. And I will tell you, based on my journey of the moment, that so much falls away that you are astounded by the being that contained them. You are so aware and so shocked by who you are. You are not the reactor. Stuff simply happens, and if you just are the space in which it happens, and there's no reaction in a way, which is a learned experience, but if you don't react, what you find is that this ground of being that experiences this has a sweetness to it that is beyond anything you can get in life, usually. Not saying that you can't love somebody or love children or love a tree or love ice cream or whatever, all these things, but those are reactive experiences, reacting to a stimulus. Reacting to sugar, which is an idea that they talk about in Buddhism, and they have a very wonderful kind of koanic statement. Do you want to enjoy the sugar or be the sugar? And the journey that I am experiencing and sharing with you, because we will all, I think, go on this journey, is stop tasting the sugar and be it. And the more you stop reacting to everything around you, the more you let go, the more you realize the being of sugar. And the fact is, it's not you as sugar, because there's no you left. There is no you. There's only sugar. There's only being. And that really is what starts to happen, especially at the very end of your life. As you are coming to the end of your life, and if you've been working and practicing and wanting this, because I think it takes a desire and an effort to make it happen, but if you can really keep this process going, as Rudy said, it's a life's work, if you can do that, becoming the sugar, or being the sugar, because it's not a becoming, you've always been it, being the sugar is what you discover, that there is sugar. And what you find, which is really fascinating, is your story, which is very much defined by your reactions to life, your story starts to fall away. It just falls away. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not like it didn't exist. You had a mother and a father, and you had siblings possibly, or you had friends, or you had stories that happened. But as you stop identifying with all of that, they don't define you. Your story, your history, your I am this DNA created being starts to erode. And what you are is this, whatever this is. And if you try to react to this, you'll create a story around it. Well, this is this or this is that. And so you even have to let go of that. You just let go, and you let go, and you realize there is no knowing because there is no one to know. The knower is part of the reactor. It's the storyteller. It's that which grasps the story. If you can let go of the knower, you are the known. And there will be no one to explain it. And there will be nothing but what I would call, it's not me, the mystery. There's just the mystery. And the mystery is beyond comprehension, beyond some one person owning it and describing it in a way that makes sense to anybody. It just is. And you start to get very simple with it, because every pronouncement you make has a kind of falsity to it. And so you kind of want to get a little bit quieter or a little bit simpler, or restate things in the most reduced, simplest way. But what I'm discovering as I move through this journey is I still have the gift of gab. I still talk. I still try to express what all this is. I don't know why. But it seems to be meaningful, and it seems to work. And as long as it works, meaning that it starts to help you in some way break you down, then it's worth continuing to do this. I can also see the moment where it just doesn't do it for me. You know, like I don't know what I would do at that point. It could be just come here and sit. But being this construct that I am or appear to be, talk happens and this stuff gets expressed. And if it has any kind of value, that's great. But what's really fascinating to me is how little of me is left and how I'm in a process right now of real painful in some way, disintegrative reality. I feel the reactive being, the stuff, the shadowy part of whatever it was that still lurks in the underground parts of the being here that have never been brought to light, they're all coming to light, and it's all getting clarified. I wouldn't say washed away, really. It's just kind of being acknowledged. And there's something else that's going on, which is there's nobody home. There's just nobody here. There is this, and I'm happy to say this is wonderful, and I love it, and I love you guys. But the love that's not coming from Bruce. It's just love. And it's not mine. It is yours. It's not owned by anybody. And you have as direct a line and access to this thing I'm talking about as I do. And it is what you're looking for, really, your whole life. It's not going to come to you in museums. It's not going to come to you in movie theaters or on television or in books or in church or in synagogue. It's going to come to you because you get really quiet long enough to feel the reactor in you is enormous, powerful, and ultimately something that is bringing you in touch with essential ingredients of your being. And at some point, the reactor itself will disintegrate, and all that will be is this. And it's a present tense isness that has at its core grace. It is full of grace. And I, on this trip, got to witness grace 24/7. I've never had such prolonged periods of grace and love. Blanche and I were celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary, belatedly, in Venice, a place that we had always wanted to go to, which I will tell you right off the bat, I did not like very much.
The adult Disney World.
It is adult Disney World. It is so chaotically claustrophobic for me. There are no streets. I mean, you go to, they say, go down the street. You look, it's 2 feet wide, and there's a whole name on it. And the taxi to the airport is a boat, and you're sitting in this boat.
Try working there.
I can't imagine it. And I had this ideal identity with Venice, that this was going to be something, and it was like, not for me. And the crowds, I mean, everything you've ever heard. But in the midst of it, I had my wife. And we had this trip celebrating a 50th anniversary is a big deal. And we had to put it off because we were moving in the middle of it, of the actual date. So we knew it would be Venice. But Blanche's birthday was in Paris. And so it all started very early. And we were just in the middle of this whole move here, and we're still unpacking a house and doing all this work, but we were separated from it by this journey. And getting away from your stuff and yourself and your all your things, all your life story, and going somewhere else is always valuable, even though travel these days is complicated and difficult. But what happened, so many things happened on this trip, but one of them was, it started to rain as Blanche and I were walking home from the Louvre at night, and we stepped into the street to get out of the rain to go to a portico. It was a covered walkway, and I was holding on to Blanche because her leg had been hurting, and she tripped and fell and pulled me down on her in the middle of a street with cars about to come. And it's raining, and it's dark, and she couldn't get up. And I was having trouble getting up. And I thought, it was like, wow, where this is a really bizarre moment. And some guy came from nowhere and ran over and helped us up. And we hobbled to the portico and continued walking home. But all I understood in that moment, one was how fragile we are and how much I love my wife and how much I cared for her safety and how I did not want to ever let go of her arm again and how grateful I was for 50 years of having this woman in my life and how my life would never have been anything without her and how our travels, I looked back at our travels. We have been almost everywhere we've ever wanted to go in the world. We have completed so much of the journey. We practiced Rudy's work for 50 years together. We have these understandings, and I felt like the luckiest person on the planet. It's very easy, I think, to have a spiritual life if you don't have anybody in it. And you just, you know, I don't think there's any problems having a spiritual life. But once you have children and grandchildren and a marriage and all the challenges that brings about, that's the work that Rudy talked about. That's real work. And if you want to see stuff brought up that you react to and you need to surrender, try being married. Because stuff comes up all the time and you always react to it. And after a while, it becomes hostility because that again. And the only way to break that up is to learn how lucky you are that there is someone to react to and that there's someone who's sharing this journey and there's somebody who is holding your hand and somebody who's there for you, and you start to sense that's all we have is each other. And that came through so profoundly on this trip. And I know as we left Venice, and actually we flew out of Madrid, but as we left, I knew the past was over. It's just over. Who we were, who we've been, what our life was, is over. Something else is happening. Yes, it's impacted by or influenced by old events, but we are not the same. We are people in a new house, in a new area. We are starting a new life that's very clearly the last chapter or series of chapters in a story. The story so far has been very fulfilling. How it will play out, I don't know. But having a partner in it and having a sense of evolving selflessness and the kind of shared selflessness that is a rare thing, I think, in this world is something I think worth bringing to the table and sharing with you guys, because it doesn't happen all that often and because it's a doable. We're not special. Blanche and I were never special. We're just two people who got married, you know, and lived a life and did all the things we could do. And good things happened, but they didn't have to. You know, things happened. I think we would have been fine even if they hadn't. But what I'm trying to get at is this is a journey with big story elements. It has chapters. It has closings. Things get done. But the recognition at this moment in time that we have finished the bulk of it, and now this next thing, you can call it the last part or the coda, whatever you want, is probably the most important part of the ride. And we all get to it. We all get to something where we realize this thing is coming to an end. At some point, either I'm going to be all alone or somebody else will be all alone. But we all leave this world alone. And if you haven't found who you are, what this being is inside you that is transcendent of everything you've ever dreamt or thought or imagined, until you get rid of your rigidity that says, this is who I am and how I function or what I do, until you break that down, you are going to feel separated from, cut off from, this ineffable, beautiful, wondrous reality that you are. When you touch this, you will open your eyes and see the world as the magical, wondrous, mystical place it is. And until you do that, you just get intimations of it through art or through music or through whatever element that your child hugging you in a particular way. You get a taste. But trust me, at some point, we can live in that space. Hugging Grace, Tara's daughter, is like one of the most uplifting things in the world. Imagine living with that all day, all night. I mean, it's hard to imagine because we always think, well, you can't hold on to that all the time. Not true. Not true. I am learning that it's there all the time. And the more you are out of the way, the more it is. And there is no you to have to own it, to celebrate it, to teach it, or anything. It will take care of all of that for you. It's grace itself. So that's what I got to tell you. This trip was great. We're going to be here now for the duration, I think. I don't know what that means, but we are here weekly, unless I, you know, make my trips to LA or to San Rafael to teach, which I would like to do because I love these people there. But mostly we're here, and you are welcome to come. If this feels in any way like a burden, or, oh God, Bruce's class again, don't come. I don't care. It's not important to me. Who shows up is not as important as sharing with those who do. So if this is something that means something to you, it has to be a big effort to get here. So as Rudy said, the effort is the class. But I will tell you, this space of grace and love and joy, which is starting to get more expansive, will be available to you, and its primary value to you is that it loves you, and I don't know where else you can go to get that. So thank you for coming. I really am grateful. And, you know, we'll be here next Sunday. And if this room gets too crowded, you know, we're building a new basement, which will be a little bit, be this room without the closure. It'll be bigger. So we could sit down there if we have to. But also, because the room is sort of crowded, if you don't feel like coming, don't come. Make space. We'll make space for the people who want to be here. But anyway, I really, really love you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, guys. This is going to be a long talk, but again, next week, same time, same station. Thanks for coming.